the market is softening a little bit. The funds have slowed down. I know this. Like, they're not out there gobbling up every single deal. So you're going to have opportunities to buy discounted properties and add them to your portfolio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I've got with me my co-host, my sidekick, the probably, I would imagine, one of the most well-known Evernest salespeople, well, employees in general, but like Hunter, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's not hard to be that well-known when you start from square. I mean, at one point, I was the only BDM in the business.
Yeah, that's why I had to expand it from just a BDM.
Yeah.
But then I expanded it to of the company, right? So you, when you got here, how many people were on our team?
We had four people on the sales team, including a director of sales.
When you got here? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's because Jen, right?
Yeah, Jen.
And Hannah. Then how many overall people in the company?
Oh boy, I don't know if it was much more than 100. I mean, that was a point where I don't think we had over 100 ITMs yet, because I remember the milestone when we hit.
When you got here,
he started like the week before I.
Okay, so there were 70.
Yeah, don't tell him, because the branding, whatever y'all were doing HR wise, you found me on LinkedIn. I mean, that's really what attracted me. So don't give him, don't make his head big. But
yeah.
You know, no. I think that was his deal.
So when you started, we were about 70 people. Now we're almost 400. Mm-hmm. And we're in, you know, 28 different
markets. I think we only have maybe 5,500 properties, maybe 5,000, 5,500. I remember looking over the VTO, and that was that year's goal. And now we just eclipsed 14,000, right?
Yeah, we're over 14,000. At the end of this month, we'll be over 15,000.
Amazing. Amazing.
So growing fast, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about Evernest.
No, wait, let me try.
Okay.
All right, welcome back to the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. You want me to practice this, right?
Yeah, for the next,
for when I start taking.
Great.
Okay, all right, all right. Let me know how I do. We'll try it full on next time.
I agree with that. I'm all for that. Yes, 100%. And then I'll just kind of be. Then you can introduce me as your sidekick.
Okay, all right.
You're Johnny like Carson. Well, nobody knows who that is. I'm dating myself.
I know who it is.
All right. Well, if you've heard, we've got a third voice in the podcast studio. Hunter, why don't you introduce our guest?
Yes. Very warm welcome to Mr. Dominic Wallace, the founder, CEO, the man from Wallace Capital Funding. A close colleague of mine. We do a lot of networking. He's helped a ton of my clients. He's a rock star, and he's been doing it for over 20 years. So, Dominic, thanks for coming on today. And we're going to talk about something really cool here, 5 mistakes when financing your real estate investment.
Yeah, this is a big topic. I mean, we have a lot of investors that reach out to us from all over the country, very, very interested in Birmingham. And a lot of times when they're just exploring the market, they don't have their funding lined up, their financing lined up. And so I know that I've seen investors make a lot of mistakes. So Dominic, we're going to let you talk about that. We're going to walk through these 5 big mistakes that investors make. But before we do that, what I'd like to do is, you know, we bring guests on here that have credibility in the market. And I want you to tell our audience like why they should listen to you, because I think it's important for them to know that like you're speaking, not like you just didn't make this stuff up. This is something you live every day and you've been doing this for 20 years. So go ahead and talk a little bit about why people should listen to you.
Yeah. First of all, thank you guys
for
having me. Yeah. Why the heck would you listen to me? So earlier, Hunter was joking. So are you 20 years old or 20 years in the business? So, all right. So I know various people listening to this, maybe in the car or if you're or in front of your computer or whatever. If you're driving, I'm going to actually show you a website, but obviously don't look at the website while you're driving.
Okay? Correct. Yep. Don't do that.
Yes.
Okay. But if you go to www.sbfe.org. So that's S as in Sam, B as in Bravo, F as in Foxtrot, E as in Echo.org. If you go on the bottom of that screen, you scroll down, you'll see a bunch of different icons of different logos. And there'll be a logo there from American Express, Bank of America, Capital One, and then some of the few larger banks, other banks too. PNC and so forth. And then right next to Truist, you'll see a logo from Wallace Capital Funding. and that we're there.
Mm-hmm.
And what's significant about that website is basically it's association. You probably guys are, as real estate investor or real estate investors or property manager, there's an association that you come together with. As lenders and various financial institutions, obviously we're in good company with organizations. I mean, they wouldn't just have us with these banks.
Yeah, you wouldn't be up there with Citibank and American Express and all that.
If we were just some, Scrubs. We have time. I can get into the story of how we came to be. I don't know if we have time.
Yeah, go for it.
But yeah, so before that, I was actually a contractor, and some of you, and I'll kind of weave together how that goes into real estate. A long time ago, I'll just say a long time ago, I used to, went to University of Virginia, had an opportunity for a track and field scholarship. And while I was there, unlike a lot of the football players, I got full rides and everything. I had a partial scholarship, so I had to do a work study job. Okay. And then during the summers, to help for schooling and so forth, I learned to paint. Not a Picasso or anything like that, right? But actually paint and turn over apartment complex. And so I had that skill, and then I had an opportunity to go back. And I'm originally from the Washington, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. So some people maybe all over the country listen to this. So I had an opportunity when I graduated to start a business. So do this. I was coaching a little too on the side, but I started doing this painting contracting business, helping realtors turn over properties for, you know, getting them ready to sell. And, you know, homeowners, they wanted to make their house look nice before the holidays, you know, the in-laws come in, whatever. But back then, so, you know, I was doing well with that, but I wanted to go bigger, right? You know, how do you go bigger? Well, in my eyes, I would go bigger properties, right? So instead of single family homes, you know, commercial properties. Well, one thing I learned very quickly, residential is a lot different than commercial.
That's right.
Right? You would think that, right?
Yep.
What I found out was I was talking to the owners of these properties, and they said, well, unfortunately, you're talking to the wrong person. You got to talk to property management company like Inverness, right? We don't hire that, you know, directly as owners. And so I was talking to the property management company, and he said, well, as a painting contractor, we don't hire that directly. You have to go through the general contractor. Okay. All right. So remember, now I'm near D.C., so I'm used to red tape, but this is not good red tape, right?
Right.
What do you think was the first question I asked the general contractor?
How much do you pay?
Juan Bueller.
Do you have a painting contractor that you
That's
work with?
A good question.
Yeah.
The more important question for me at the time was, how do you pay?
Do you pay cash every Friday?
Yeah. So, yeah. What do I need to do to get paid? The first thing they said was, we'll pay you when we get paid. Now, remind you now, you got the owner, property managing company, all those layer tapes to get paid, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking, okay, well, this is crazy. And then this thing that said, well, we'll pay you. Well, obviously they said, we'll pay you when you get paid. And then the other thing, I was like, okay, well, if you send us this little piece of paper called an invoice, we'll pay you 30 days from that date. This is crazy,
yeah,
right? This,
yeah, you need to have cash in the bank, and you need to have enough so that you don't have to have that money right away.
Right.
That's, I mean, essentially.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Now these are the big boys. All these people with the big boys. They all have the money, and they're looking at me.
Uh huh.
So now the type of guys that work for me, you know, we when we paint a house, typically, you know, we. You like the job, what happens? We get paid right then and there.
Yeah.
You gotta cut us a check or whatever.
Yeah.
If it's a big job, you know, maybe it take a few days, but not on like the commercial job. And I couldn't go back to my guys because these are guys, you know, every Friday, they want their beer money, right? That's mm-hmm. that's what they want, yeah. right? So I couldn't go back to them and be like, can you wait 30 days?
30 days. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to buy you a drink in 30 days. Yeah.
30 days. So I'm scrambling. So, of course, I go to the local bank. The bank said, no, we don't, you know, you're too small.
That. Yeah, right.
So I'm looking around, looking for a financial institution. They would fund me for this. And I introduced to this asset-based lender, also known as a factor. And they said, well, as long as you working for a creditworthy customer, and, you know, in the DMV, you know, large corporations, government agencies, then we'll advance you. We'll give you a line of credit, receive a line of credit based on that, the creditworthiness of your customer. So I was like, wow, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So you're telling me as many papers of these creditworthy customer, I can get access to cash. So I don't, you know, I don't have to wait. And they said, yes. So here's what I did. I told all my contracting buddies about this. And what ended up happening is the contracting buddies, well, the finance company was like, Dominic, you send us so much business, we'll pay you a referral fee for this. You know what ended up happening? I was making more money with referral fees in my contracting business. I'm in the wrong business,
yeah,
right?
Right. Yeah, you need to get into the lending business. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. So here I go, and I'm like, wow. So basically, that's where I put out my shingle. And then over time, here we are 20 years later. We're actually financial institutes. You know, we got first is brokering deals. You know, you probably have people here listening. Maybe they're getting started on their first deal, first couple deals, maybe have some 10 deals. Before you have your hedge fund and all this kind of stuff, you got to start somewhere, right?
That's right.
And so here I am. Now we first started on that type of financing, and some of the contracting buddies say, hey, can you finance this property and that kind of stuff? And then we got connected, got some lines of credit, got connected with some other people with some bigger pockets. And here we are financing investment property for real estate investors, commercial properties, all sorts of things. And I can't say that I've seen everything, but I've seen a lot.
You've seen enough to come up with five huge mistakes.
Yeah, and that's what I want. I want to keep you guys from getting messed up.
That's right.
So let's talk about that.
All right. So what's the first one? What's the first big mistake you see people make?
The first mistake that I see, it's just like Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, and Girl Scouts, just being prepared. Most of the reason why I say they'll get into an opportunity or get in a deal and they don't have their ducks in a row. They're not ready to go. They haven't consulted with a financial partner first. So what I'm going to need to do, you know, maybe they'll kind of get into a contract.
Right. So they'll sign a contract and say, oh, yeah, I can close in 15 days or whatever. Without even talking to somebody like you.
Yeah, they're like, what the heck?
They hadn't talked to they don't know a property manager. They don't know the contractor to get the deal fixed. Mm. They're really just kind of they're winging it. And I would imagine that's definitely something that people with a certain personality, like hunters, would probably do. They're fire now, aim later type people. That's the way I am.
I'm a rainmaker.
Yeah. We're out there trying to get deals done versus somebody who may be a typical CPA personality in the details. I think there's a lot of people that absolutely they get paralysis by analysis. So they stop and they don't.
On the other side.
They're on the other side. But the ones you're talking about are the ones that are different. They're like, shoot, I'm going to dive in.
And I call it toxic optimism.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's true because people like me, people like Hunter, we're like, hey, we know that action trumps everything. So we're going to take action. So we throw, you know, we put contracts, people under contracts. But you're saying that, I mean, and I agree with that's a huge mistake.
Just give somebody a call and just kind of discuss it.
Discuss the deal.
Yeah.
Well, this does play into what we've talked about of like getting your team together before you start putting properties under contracts. So this is a big one though. Yeah.
So what kind of stuff are you looking for in terms of preparation, like for you to get a deal done with somebody? What do they need to bring to the table? Like, what are a few things that they should do ahead of time?
Well, I guess we can go into details if you want to do that, like the different programs and so forth. And what requirements?
Let's keep it high level. Yeah, let's keep it high level. We can get into. We'll have you back and go into more detailed stuff.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's kind of a two-edged sword because, like, today I've had someone call me, hey, and they asked me a lot of great questions in preparation. You know, I'm going to go on the contract. You know, what are your requirements? You know, let me figure something out. And it was kind of funny. One of the guys is actually a realtor, and he's like, do I put on the contract cash only?
What? I'm like, oh, cash offer? Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, I mean, maybe it's my cash.
It's not your cash, unless you have cash. Unless you have then you don't need to be talking to me.
Yeah, you know, yeah, pretty much. But, I mean...
That's a great point. I mean, even just knowing that, like, that's submitting the, that's the first step in getting a property, submitting the offer. And if you
submitting the offer, yeah. Now, I'm, well, in this market right now, and maybe it's starting to get better now, that, you know, there's competition, someone who has a cash offer versus someone who's getting financed.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And one of the things I would suggest on that lines of getting prepared, there's actually some lenders you can do a lot of due diligence with them to actually get pre-approval letters and that kind of stuff first. Yeah,
that's right. So you have the pre-approval so that when you make the offer, they're like, okay, this person's good. You're probably still not going to trump cash with fewer contingencies. But if you have somebody has cash that has a longer, you know, waiting period and inspection period, and you come in saying, hey, I'm already pre-approved and I can make this happen quick, maybe that would help.
And there's ways to, and you guys could probably shed light on this too, you know, to possibly put things under contract and you have a due diligence period, you know, for the most part, it takes us within 24 to 48 hours to look over a deal. You know, you have some time, you know, say 5 business days.
Yeah, we typically do 5 to 10 days of an inspection where we're sending somebody out to look at the property, get an, like we've done an eyeball test of, hey, here's how much it's probably going to cost to rehab this property. But then we want to send, have an inspection done and send somebody out there to look at it. So that's plenty of time to get, make sure the deal works for you as a lender.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And we wanted to, just from a high level of things, we only have like a 2-page application for a fix and flip. And then we ask for what's called a schedule of improvements list.
Right.
And then with that, we'll actually even send it to our appraisal department to make sure the deal even worked before we ask you to, you know, get into the transaction.
But these things you're mentioning, I think that there might be some folks out there who have never heard of that. And so that's very useful for, you know, the rookie investor or just someone trying to get started or using alternative funding avenues to get that done. That's great.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. So that's one mistake. What's the second mistake?
I guess that's 1 and 1A, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's good.
But yeah, so this is big. Using the wrong funding tool.
All right.
So for those contractors, you don't want to use a screwdriver to hammer a nail, right?
Right. Correct.
It's the same thing for funding tools. You know, I've seen some people will use like a line of credit to purchase a property. That's not the wrong tool. That's not what it's used for. A line of credit is maybe utilized for like repairs, you know, like maybe you flix and flip and you're using some of the money to fix up a property and then you're going to sell it. You're going to pay that line of credit off.
Right.
Because a line of credit is a temporary type of vehicle. But a fix and flip loan is for the purpose of purchasing the property and fixing it up. And then you have a buy and hold loan, right? Where the property of purchasing the property and renting the property out.
Yeah. And so in those cases, are the most people getting financing for the long term? They're getting it. They're getting the rehab money, doing all of that, and then they're refinancing. Is that what you see a lot?
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly,
buying a distressed property.
You're buying a distressed property and fixing. So, like, if your goal is to purchase that property, fix it up, and sell it, or purchasing that property, fix it up, and then renting
it. Yeah, rent it and hold it. Yep.
You need one type of financing to fix the property up and a different type of financing to actually hold the property.
Yeah, to lock it up, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, because most rehab loans are short-term loans, and you're not going to want to use that to.
Yeah. I used a line of credit back when I was wholesaling houses, so I was – line of credit, super simple. I could tell people, I'll pay you cash and close tomorrow as long as we can get clean title and, you know, what usually what in 24 hours. We did that like once, but in as little as 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And that worked, but I hear what you're saying, because if you're, you know, you definitely don't want to use that line of credit for something like that for, you know, it is a very temporary thing. Because we were selling these properties fast.
Yeah, because some lines of credit, you know, and obviously interest rates has gone up. You know, it's kind of like our credit card rates and some financial institutions lines of credit. And that's, you know, that tool is not utilized for buy and hold. But, I mean, your strategy, I mean, you knew what the strategy was, that either you were going to cash out of that property or you can use that line of credit temporarily, and then you had an exit strategy to maybe refinance.
If we ended up holding a house, we would refinance it and pay that line of credit back.
So that would say number two for sure.
Okay,
making sure that you have the right tool. One of the other things I would just say.
So this is number three.
Number three. I would just say. And we're in a microwave society, so it's just so easy to take the easy way out for things. Just looking on the internet, just going any, you know, way out there. You want to find a reputable financial institution to work with, because I've seen people get in a situation, and now they're asking me to refinance them out of that situation. Yeah. Where they could have avoided it.
Why? What problems happen? Like, what is the, okay, just say somebody did a Google search and they found, oh, this person will lend me money. What kind of trouble do they get into?
So, like, I was looking at a deal up in Washington, D.C. area where the loan was more of a hard money loan, not a rehab loan, and she needed more rehab money. And then she was coming to me because there. And some of the listeners might be in there, like there's certain cities you have different rules and regulations, or even nearby like Fairfield, you know, just dealing with some of the municipalities on some of the rules. There was some rules on the type of windows that she, and she didn't know this, were going in and she using the wrong, I guess it's part of the other one, the wrong financial tool and that kind of stuff. To get in that, and she was like, I need someone to kind of bail me out, and we're not, no one wants to bail people out, they want to make good loans, right?
Yeah, no doubt. So did you help her?
Yes, I helped her. Okay. I helped her. I found her another local
okay good her. Yeah,
so it's important also from what you're saying is to get with a lender who knows the local area that you're working in. We've seen that too, where folks, we have a lot of investors from California, New York, New Jersey, out of state, and there's a lot of lenders from those states that offer fix and flip loans and rehabs and hard money, but they don't know they don't know what's going on down here.
Various parts of the country, but not might be there physically.
And we've had even, there was something recently where Clay was working on a deal and they were working with a hard money lender out of state, and they had asked for an inspection. They required an inspection, but the inspection was going to be done remotely by their people in California rather than because they didn't have somebody here.
Wow. Yeah. That's not going to work.
Yeah. So needless to say that we found another option, but.
So know who you're dealing with, right? So trust is a big deal. Know that it's a reputable company. That's very, very important. All right. So what's number four?
Applying to multiple funding sources at one time.
Mm, okay. So what's the problem with applying to multiple at one time?
So, well, let's just say this. The funding community is smaller than you think.
Okay.
So you may be shooting yourself in the foot. You know, it's just like if you're kind of taking a spread of the approach, you know, nobody wants to deal with that. You know, if you're just kind of shopping the lender.
Why is that? Let's say I needed to borrow $200,000, right? So why doesn't Service First Bank and these other banks and you, why wouldn't y'all want me to, or why would y'all care? I guess, I mean, I know why, because it's competition, but does that send off some type of signal to these banks that we don't want to deal with this person or what?
Well, I'll just say like this, from the credit bureau standpoint, like is if you're applying to multiple lenders,
they're going to be pulling your inquiries, right?
And that can actually hurt you. And then your actual score goes down low. So it's just a better idea just to, you know, do your homework, talk to a few lenders and find out what their requirements are before you apply so you won't be in that situation. Yep. Plus, you're just drawing up red flags. If this person is applying to multiple places at one time, what is going on?
Yeah.
Are they in a precarious situation?
Yeah, are they in a desperate situation?
What about their application is not, why isn't it getting accepted?
Yeah.
I remember we had a friend who was selling a house, and they had rented this house for a period of time, and it was fixed up. It was in the city of Tarrant here in Birmingham, fixed up. And this resident was like, yes, I'm ready to buy the house. So he was really pumped. He's ready to sell it. You know, they had been living there for however many years, couple of years or whatever. And so they had it all lined up. They had gotten approved. They're ready to buy this house. And dadgummit, if like a few days before closing, they just went in, and I don't know if they like pull credit or just check. And they had
some do.
Yeah. They had bought a motorcycle that week. And they were like, sorry, can't do it. And so you can, like, if you're getting pulled from multiple places or something else happens, they can go, nope, we're going to shut you down.
And I've had a real estate investor at the time. They were doing two properties, fix and flip properties. They were doing an SBA loan. They were doing all this kind of thing at one time.
Yeah.
I'm like, slow down.
Yeah.
Hold your horses. I mean, it's just, you know, just looks bad. And I don't want people to be like, you know, I'm a real estate investor, I'm an entrepreneur, to, like you said earlier, you know, go, you know, let's find some deals, let's do some deals. You know, how many doors are you trying to get this upcoming year to make your goals? You know, I don't want to stop people from doing this. I'm just putting a yield sign
right
for you guys just to think about.
Well, this is a big mistake because it can cause people from getting approved, and that's not what you want to do. You want to be able to pull the trigger. So just take your time and do it. Like, talk with one person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
All right. So, what number are we on now? This number?
That's four.
That was four. Yeah, this is number five.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess what I've said this earlier, take the time to assess your business when the expert. Well, I guess, well, let's say this one. Assuming that you know what the requirements are.
Now repeat this. What is this again?
So this is what I wrote down. Assuming that you know what the requirements are.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, right.
You just.
You're just assuming without verifying it, you're saying.
Yeah. And then I guess that's like similar, putting your name on the line in the contract. You know, you don't want to lose your earnest money and then not knowing what's going on the backside. So, yeah.
So what you're saying is you see investors who kind of get ahead of their skis a little bit, is what we like to say. And they say, hey, I already know what the qualifications are going to be. So I'm going to I'm going to fill out this contract.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a couple $1,000 of earnest money down and then I'll get approved later. And then they realize that, oh, I'm not going to get approved.
I mean, here's the situation. I mean, the market is changing very quickly.
Right.
Not just on the real estate side, but the financing side too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the rising interest rate, what the Fed's doing, you know, not only what the Fed's doing, with the cost of the money is out there.
Yeah.
The type, you know, where the funds come from, you know, what kind of yield that the, you know, the investor, the people is putting money in. You know, I work with some financial institution that's connected to pension funds with hedge funds, you know. All of this is connected.
Yeah.
You know, that's why 08, you know, 08 and 09 happened, you know, all this stuff was connected. Obviously we're in a lot better situation now.
I think we are.
But
they're going to be a lot more cautious.
Yeah.
They're going to be more careful.
Credit is tightening right now.
Yeah.
Credit is tightening. Talking with some of the lenders that focus on working with developers, you know, like large housing developments. You know, it's just some of the LTVs are coming down. You know, they're asking for more cash down. They're asking for, you know, more pre-sales, you know, like a local development here. You know, that development got built for the simple fact that they pre-sold some of the lots and that kind of stuff before, you know, they got the actual funding from the financial institution and the bank and so forth.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
Yeah. Continue to check in. Stay abreast of the requirements because they might require a different cash reserve or a higher credit score, you know, additional underwriting requirements. Maybe their spreadsheet changed.
And to me, that's one of the kind of important aspects of getting to know your lender and spending time with them and developing a relationship with them. If you've done a few deals with somebody that you trust, you've had a great experience, then you can call and check in and say, hey, tell me what's going on in the market. I'm thinking about putting an offer down on this property, but I just want to make sure that like I'm still good and I'm still, you know, everything's still very good.
Yeah. And develop a relationship because, you know, like let's say, you know, your goal is to do 10 deals in the next 12 months or whatever. If you have a relationship, you know, hey, let's do this together.
Yeah.
Maybe if you first get started, you know, they might not let you do three at one time. You know, they might want you to do that initially. You know,
let's just dip our toe in the water first. Yeah. How about you do one?
Yeah.
And let us get our money back and then you can do another one.
Well, a lot of lenders do that. They give you a better rate once you've done more. They'll give you a higher loan to value. Yeah. I think the same is true. And on the reverse side, it doesn't always have to be an unfavorable change, but a favorable change. Stay ahead of those favorable. An example in the listing world, there was, you know, a lot of agents when the rate started really peaking in the last few months, they were doing the approach, oh, well, let's drop the price. Well, it's been on the market for 69 days. We got to drop the price, get some action in here. And they're freaking out. And buyers or sellers are like, okay, that's fine. But then the bank started doing something creative. They did this 2-1 buy down program, right? Where they buy down, you know, this listing agent or the seller will buy down the interest rate for the buyer to make it more attractive rather than dropping that price. You're getting your money. The buyer's getting what they want because, you know, they don't care about a $10,000 drop really in the grand scheme of thing. That's with the interest rates where they are. They're still paying a lot of money on that. And so what a creative solution. And if you're aware of that, if you're in good communication with your agent, you know, these things with the lenders, you might be privy to some of those.
Can I share a strategy that really, really help? Okay. So some of the lenders will have a certain LTV, meaning a loan, which stands for a loan to value where they lend. So typically the highest for a buy and hold is like 80% loan to value. They want you to bring 20% down or so. A lot of times some of the LTVs have gone down. There's some lenders that will allow you to have what's called a CLTV, which is basically a combined LTV from seller financing and what the lender will do. And a lot of times what you can do based on the combined interest rates of what the seller would offer and what the lender offers, sometimes you can get your, you know, rates way down. Let's just say like there's a like an interest only loan period of, I don't know, 2.99% that the seller is offering and the lender maybe what, 9 or 8, 9, whatever percent, you have that combined interest rate. Now you're back where we were year ago, right?
Depending on how much the seller will finance.
Right. Yeah. But when you're talking about how the seller is having a hard time selling the property for the purchase price that they really want to, as long as the value of that property is there from the lender standpoint, that property still appraises, there's a way to combine those two LTV where the seller can still get the purchase price they want.
Yeah, what they want.
And the lender can get the LTV that they want. And there's ways to just structure that.
The buyer's okay with the combined interest rate.
Right. And they're combined with combined interest rate. You know, there might be a balloon or something, you know, some ways to kind of work the deal out that each side could be having.
We've done that with acquisitions of property management companies,
really,
owner financing part of it, and we'll go get a loan for part of it. Well, this has been good.
Yeah.
Well,
that's almost like a bonus one. I mean, just be open to creativity.
That's one of our strategies. We're going to have him back and we're going to walk through the five things that you need to, like, five strategies.
Right, right.
In working with your.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to do that. Yeah. We'll do that on another episode.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here, Dominic, man. If people wanted to get in touch with you, wanted to reach out about maybe a loan for a property here in Birmingham, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, one way is just give us a call, area code 205-823-9530. We also have an 800 number. I mean, you don't really.
Who uses 800 numbers?
We still
Who
have
does
one.
It? Who does it? I don't know.
I would if there was a payphone.
Right.
It doesn't matter now, but yeah, I mean, just call it 205 number. That's fine.
Okay, good. All right.
Also, I just recently, for this article, you know, putting this thing together, if you didn't have a pen and wrote down some of the stuff you can go to 5waystofundrealestate.com. And
is it the number five or spelled out?
It's spelled out.
Spelled out.
5waystofundrealestate.com.
5waystofundrealestate.com.
That's good.
And then of course, you can go to wallacekebblefunding.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a site just specialized for real estate, fundsforinvestor.com.
Can we say the tagline? You ready? Wallace Capital Funding, where
we'll show you the money.
That's it. That's great. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for coming to the podcast studio. It's really just my office. And Hunter, thanks for being on the show again. This is twice in one day. Y'all don't know this, but we just recorded one earlier. So we'll wait a little bit and release this one. But happy new year, everybody. We hope you're going to have a fantastic 2023. If we at Evernest can ever help you, if you want to talk to Hunter about certain areas around Birmingham, man, he can help you out. He can help you think through these. We've got investor-friendly agents. We've got Hunter who helps on the property management side. We've got connections like Dominic who help lend and attorney. I mean, we've got everybody. Like, we can help you with pretty much anything you need real estate related in Birmingham for single family and small multifamily.
They're awesome.
Yeah,
all right.
2023 could be your year.
Let's 2023, that's right.
Call us, we'll help you make it happen.
Absolutely, especially since the market is softening a little bit. Like, the funds have slowed down. I know this. Like, they're not out there gobbling up every single deal. So you're going to have opportunities to buy discounted properties and add them to your portfolio. So if we can help you, let us know. Leave us a review, and we'll be back shortly with another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast.